Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. And I don't know, I'm going to tell our engineer if he's listening. I'm hearing a bunch of noise and feedback. I wonder if we've got a clear line. I hope everybody can hear me. If you can't, well, maybe we'll have to do something about that. But at any rate, I'm going to continue and let you know that today's show is dealing with spiritual discipleship. Now, this is a kind of little different than what most people think of, I think, when they hear those two words necessarily. So, of course, I'm going to need to probably do some explanation, as I usually do, about what I mean and define things, as I often do. And hopefully, by the end of today's show, we'll have a clearer understanding of what this is all about. Now, to begin with, when I'm referring to these two words, spiritual discipleship, discipleship is really a person choosing to limit themselves to develop their senses and their consciousness so that they can better understand and create more of their own creator in themselves at first and in all those that they come into contact with. And some people refer to this as seeing people as souls or functioning from soul consciousness. And if that's the case, that's a very good thing, actually. And it comes about through a whole process, which I will be describing today. And it's kind of structured, but at the same time, it's extremely creative and unique to each person that is involved in it. And by the word spiritual discipleship, I'm referring to specifically what spiritual means, which is using the thought of our own creator in what we're doing and helping ourselves to grow our creator. So spiritual discipleship obviously means just what I just said, putting those two concepts together. You can see how that all fits. Now, if, in fact, this is something that has intrigued you or that you have actually tried yourself, you can give me a call and talk to me about it, or for anything dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, which is what the show is generally about, you can call in and talk about whatever you would like. And you can call 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. If you're in Canada, how about 888-815-9756? And in either case, you'll be able to jump in and say something about the subjects. All right, so I gave you an idea of what I mean by spiritual discipleship. Let me tell you what my understandings are about this. These are my thoughts and opinions, but they also come from a general context of a thing called ageless wisdom. But that isn't really, it isn't like a doctrine per se. It's a collection of spiritual thinking from a number of different sources. And it is, in my opinion, the closest thing to being spiritual truth you can find anywhere in this world. But for those of you who think differently, of course you can give me a call and say so, or not, if you don't want to. All right, so what does it mean, then, if you're going through this thing that is called spiritual discipleship, or if you're thinking about it, or for people who have gone through it, and how many people are doing this sort of stuff, and all of that? Well, let me tell you a little bit about the process in terms of where people tend to do it in their incarnations within many, many lifetimes. In general, now this is a general concept, people tend to start this process somewhere between about 600 and 800 or so lifetimes in incarnation as a human being. No guarantee that any one numbers of those, between those two numbers, will be the number that somebody will do it. Most people do it probably closer to around 700. So I said 6 to 8, give it a wide enough range. In some spiritual circles, it's talked about as being done right at 700 lifetimes is when people start. But I think that that is just a average and not a specific and absolute time by any stretch of the imagination. Because, again, it's based upon the choices that each of us chooses to do when we might want to increase through limiting ourselves our awareness and our consciousness of our own creator and ways of creating more of that creator. So this is a really individual thing. And to say that it happens at a very specific time for all people would, to me, be a contradiction in the idea of freedom of thought and freedom of action. And I think that's part of our creator's own thought. So it would be kind of contrary to that creator's thought to say, well, it's going to happen right now for everybody. It doesn't make any sense, to me anyway. Okay, so people tend to do it fairly late because, again, using the averages, it takes a person about 77 lifetimes to go through this whole process. Now, it could be anywhere, in my mind, from 50 to 100 lifetimes. It takes a person to go through the whole process. And where does the process end up? Well, you start the process at more towards the end of your human development, and it is ended when, by, we'll say, completing a number of different parts of this spiritual discipleship, which I'll explain in today's show, a person reaches a point where they create themselves into a member of the next kingdom beyond human. And that kingdom is sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls or the spiritual kingdom or the spiritual hierarchy. And there's all kinds of different names for it. But the important thing is that you're like a superhuman being. And you make yourself into this being by this process. However, the purpose of the process is not to do that. The purpose of the process is to create more of the creator in yourself and in others. It's just that it is a byproduct of the process, and it is not the motive that people have. Because if they only have that motive, or if they even have that motive as a primary factor, it will undermine and prevent them from being able to achieve it. So if you say, well, gee, I want to be a superhuman being, because wouldn't that be great, and I can put the letter SH, superhuman, you know, after my name, you know, have that as a title or something, or I could tell all my friends about it, or I will impress the heck out of who knows who and make myself into something special, and everybody will either like me or fear me or whatever, whatever it might be. And if that is what your goal is, guess what? You can't get there by having that goal. So the absolute positive best way to not get there is to have as a goal to want to be there. So it's a real strange, contradictory type of circumstance. And so from that perspective, it is something that we all should be aware of, because sometimes I am approached by people. Sometimes people come up to me and say, well, gee, I want to be one of those masters, you know. How do I get there? Can you sign me up, or do I pay my tuition, or, you know, what do I do to get the certificate, or, you know, get bestowed upon, or what? And of course, the answer is you're not ready, if that's where you are. But there's a lot of people who unfortunately are there, and some of them have told me they paid $1,500 and they went to the Bahamas or wherever, and or to the Caribbean, and they got themselves a certificate that says that they are either on their way or they're there or whatever. And I don't care how much you pay, and I don't care how many certificates you got, that won't get you there. All right, let's talk about what does get you there, and let me go through the process with you, because this is a relatively scientific process, even though very few people know it from that perspective. But I'm going to actually explain it today from a perspective of what I think is, we'll say, demystified and is logical or reasonable. And most people, I think, who are listening are going to say, oh, well, that kind of makes sense. Why didn't I think of that before? Some of you have heard me talk about this subject before, and it may make a lot of sense to you. And you may also know some of the explanations. That's great. Maybe this will clarify those parts you don't know. Or maybe you'll just hum along, so to speak, and say, well, yeah, I know all that. That's fine. If you do, that's great. But for those of the listeners tonight who do not have a complete understanding of this, I think it may be of some value. So let me go through it. To begin with, in the very beginning of the process, before a person actually says, well, gee, you know, I think I'm going to limit myself to increase these things, and I'm going to actually make choices that are somewhat sacrificial, but at the same time are pro-awareness and growth. Oftentimes people say they would like to do that, but they don't actually do it. Those people are sometimes referred to as aspirants, like you aspire. They aspire. And they would like to do it, except that they aren't doing it. And there's a large body of people, actually, that are in that category. Sometimes as many people are aspirants as the whole group of people who are actually doing spiritual discipline, which is where the word spiritual discipleship really comes from, is really related to. And so, interestingly, amazingly, there could be more people who would wish to do it and who aren't than there are people who are actually doing it at any one time. And this could, of course, vary, but nonetheless, it is not uncommon for that to be the case. Aspirants, you generally start learning about this, they start reading about it, they may come to some groups or whatever, talks, lectures, but they generally don't do what I'm going to be telling you about. So they generally, they may dabble, they may try it for a day or two, but there's very little consistency and very little, we'll say, actual activity surrounding their involvement. Okay, but what are, besides the people who are aspirants, what are the people who are actually doing something doing? And to begin with, we've got to look at this by, we'll call it, senses and bodies. That's the best way to understand this in the simplest way. I mean, there are a lot of other ways to explain it, but the other ways are relatively abstruse and kind of like very difficult to get to the meat of what we're really talking about. I think through talking about the senses and bodies, people can kind of say, oh, well, that makes sense. And let's start with the easiest, the most basic, and the one body that people who are physically alive usually refer to as being the body that they start to do this process on. And that is called the etheric physical body. Some people just say the physical body. And what people are trying to do when they're spiritually disciplining that body is they're trying to improve their awareness or senses so that their consciousness can grow over time, so that they can specifically become much more aware of what it means to be a part of their own creator and how they can help others to do the same. And how they can bring about this process in a way that unifies their senses into a single sense over time. Now, this is no easy job. It takes some real difficult, we'll say, choices for a person to do. And it oftentimes leads to some contradictions. It leads to some, we'll say, significant issues that I will bring up later in the show. But for right now, let's just go through the basics of it. So there are two senses that each person must pay particular attention to if they're going to do any kind of spiritual discipline. And this would mean anyone who's going to be a spiritual disciple. And those two senses have to do with the heart and the crown chakras or centers. These two centers and senses actually directly give us a sense of our creator. The heart chakra tells us how we can best understand the thought of our own creator, spirit in other words, and how we can grow more of it through the head chakra. The head chakra is a kind of more creative element. The two together give us understanding and creation, which is a very important thing. And both of those are part of spiritual thought as well. So without those two kind of working together, and without a person choosing to limit some of their other senses so they can become aware of these more subtle senses, they may not be able to become more aware of their creator. And this is the difficulty most people have, and they don't get it completely in the beginning, is that one needs to limit their, we'll say, material sense and their more selfishly focused sense to a point where they can actually use these more subtle senses to understand God or their creator and understand spirit in themselves and other people. And if the limitation is not followed, if someone doesn't, so to speak, ignore these senses that are gross, what I call them growths, that are material. And that's the five senses everybody's familiar with, by the way. Then what happens is these two more subtle senses escape us. And we just can't achieve a growth in them, because in order to unify all the senses, they have to be grown to about the same level. And unfortunately, in most people, the two senses I just named are oftentimes a fraction of the sense that we use on a daily basis in the material world. We just don't use them very often. This takes consistent effort to make these senses grow, and grow in ways that are really helpful and important. So I want you to think about that. Now, this is no easy process, because that means that someone is going to have to sacrifice some of their awareness of the material world in order to focus on becoming more aware of the spiritual world. And for a lot of people, this starts to interfere with their receiving and controlling the material from the material world. And this is not something that is as simple as it sounds, because for a lot of people, the material world, whether or not they realize it or not, is tremendously seductive and highly convincing that it is the world, the real world, when it isn't. It's the unreal. But unfortunately for a lot of people, they don't understand that until maybe they've gone through hundreds and hundreds, up to 800 maybe, lifetimes, and then start recognizing that. Okay, we're going to be back in about a little over a minute, because we've really cut down the commercial time, so I can yak at you more, and you can also yak at me if you want. And when we come back, I'll explain a lot more about this process.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
And we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And just for our engineer's sake, I'm still hearing that funny noise, but he said that it's going out clear to all of you listeners. So if I'm hearing funny noises, that's okay, because the important thing is what you are hearing. Okay, so let's continue on. Now, After a person has reached this point where they're willing to start making some sacrifice in their awareness, this is a critical time. It oftentimes requires quite a few incarnations. So let me explain why that is the case. Each incarnation is a learning experience, especially while physically alive, although certainly it continues while we're astrally and lower mentally alive before we rejoin ourselves back to our soul. But it's a learning experience in understanding that during the time we are here, which is relatively short, by the way, we are supposed to be functioning in a more balanced way that allows us to focus on what we're really here to do, which is our soul's mission. Now, the soul mission business doesn't become dominant until like 90% of our lifetimes have come by and gone. And we have slowly developed this sense of our own soul in ourselves. So when we finally incarnate, we're almost aware of it from, say, about age 28 on an average. And it really, you know, is a strong impetus to get us to consider spiritual discipleship. But for a lot of people, it just doesn't happen. I mean, obviously, if it's got to go through 90% of your lifetimes or so before it's going to dawn on you that that's it, then obviously 90% of the people have, you know, it just never comes out as being anything to do with them, and so they don't pay any attention to it. And it could be a lot more than that. I'm just rounding these numbers off. The real numbers might be something like 95% or 96%. So it's actually a fairly high number of people that really this is not something they would even think of as being part of their awareness. It's like, well, who cares, you know? Now, that doesn't mean that you're following any specific discipline or any specific method of doing spiritual discipline. It just means that it's part of your being to be looking into this and to be looking for ways to express yourself spiritually. And it could be in a religious sense, or it could be totally non-religious. That is not an issue either. But it is an issue in terms of trying to find one's creator. And that is the main basis of what we're talking about here. Okay, so in the beginning, most people are concerned about the etheric, physical part of themselves, and they're trying to increase their spiritual sense in a physical sense and balance that to all their other senses. So the other senses are not the dominant senses. And if you think about it, it's really two against fun life. So the balancing means that you really have to have, putting it in terms of sevens, each one of the two senses, our spiritual senses, have to be increased a very great amount to balance out the five physical senses. I hope you're following my math there. And so you can see that this really gets into not only a qualitative issue of the fact that most people haven't been using the heart and crown chakras all that much, but now they have to offset the fact that they're using their physical senses much, much more of the time. And another thing that is seductive about the process, which I used in the last segment of the show, is that the energy that is flowing through a sense tends to make that sense more dominant. And the energy that flows through the lower five senses, the lower five chakras, evolves a much more dense form of energy than the energy, which is mostly etheric energy, by the way, that is going through the heart and crown chakra. That being the case, as we look at this, our physical body is dominating us much more often than our etheric body, unless we're spiritual. And so consequently, it really becomes difficult for us to shift gears and lead a more spiritual life because our senses are kind of dead to us about what that means and how to do it. You can see the complications. Now, of course, if you're listening to me right now, you might say, well, but since you're telling us about this, couldn't we overcome that? And the answer is absolutely you can. So I don't want you to think this is like a lost cause. No, if you're listening to me tonight, there's a good chance you're among the small percentage of people who actually have an interest in this and who would probably be successful at it if they had the right direction, of which I can help supply some. both in today's show and then through some stuff that I've written. And besides that, if you just call me up, I'll help you. Yeah, I really will. No charge. How do you like that? Now, see, that's a good deal, because the people who have been involved in doing this are the, and I have myself been doing it some myself, of course, and helped others. Those are the people who can be most helpful to those who are not yet doing it, because they understand the process from the inside out, rather than just having read about it in books or something like that, or tried to, you know, kind of figure it out but never having done it themselves. It's very difficult, if you haven't done it, to really understand the problems of it and how it is so imperative to try and get to the state where your awareness of spirit is as great as your awareness of the physical world around you and of the energy that goes through your senses every second almost while you're awake about the physical world. It's amazing how much we're flooded with information. It's awareness that first has to be changed before we can raise consciousness. Consciousness is like love, givingness. And the whole idea is to become more conscious in general, but without awareness, one cannot become more conscious. So we could say the bottom of the barrel, the bottom of the foundation, maybe, of the whole situation is awareness. It's not consciousness. Consciousness comes after one has awareness. So very important to understand that principle. Okay, so most people start with their physical bodies, their etheric physical bodies. And they need to be balancing their etheric sense of their creator with their more physical sense. There's some etheric too, but it's mostly physical sense in the lower centers. So the two have a balance. And they not only have to be balanced between the spiritual part and the material part, but they have to be balanced between each other. And it's a fairly complicated procedure, which I'm not going to even go into because it's too complicated really to cover in today's show. But I think the important thing here is to understand that it is done by usually working together with other people and providing spiritual service over time with these other people. And it is done in a way, because souls work that way, it is done in a way that is connecting a person to their soul. It's making them like a functional soul in part while they're living physically. That's how the process takes place. Can you do it alone? Well, for a while you can try, but if you really want to be successful with this, you need to involve yourself with others, because the complexity of doing it is so great, and the illusions to ourselves of our successes or failures with it are so great that without the feedback and assistance of other people, you usually can't succeed. It's just very difficult. Part of the problem is that you have to use the spiritual senses to determine how well you're doing, and those are the ones that are so limited and so much reduced in comparison to the material senses. And for a lot of people, they got caught in the material side of things, even though they're trying to become a spiritual disciple. Isn't that interesting? That your motive can be really to be a spiritual disciple, but yet you can still delude yourself into doing things that are almost completely material in outcome. What does material mean? Well, gaining more things that are a material thing in a person's life. Some people might say, well, what I'm going to do is I'll become a spiritual disciple and I'll build a great big monument to all spiritual disciples, including myself, and around the monument I'll build all kinds of buildings and other, and before long it's all about a material outcome that really has very little to do, if anything, with being spiritual. This is a way a lot of people get lost in this kind of process. They don't see how much the material world is really a trap. Now, does that mean that you give up all material things? No, because I said it's a balance. You have to function in the material world to create goodness in it, create more of God in it. And in order to achieve that, you can't throw away all your material senses. That's called Gnosticism. And it comes from people usually who consider knowledge to be more important than spiritual development. And the Gnostics actually were people who sought knowledge, but oftentimes they were denying the material world. That's kind of a crazy thing to think about. And so they got lost in the knowledge itself and didn't realize that knowledge in itself, without there being concepts about God, doesn't really lend itself to helping a person become more spiritual. So we have to be careful of all these traps that we can get into. How does the process work, though? How many times does a person have to come and just deal with their etheric physical body before they can get through the process of joining and balancing the centers and being able to go ahead and start working on another body and senses? In general, this is going to surprise a lot of people, this can be dozens of lifetimes. Although the etheric physical body is the easiest body to do because it's such a slow process, it can take quite a while to get through this process of achieving this result. And some people don't do it in every lifetime. What happens is maybe one or two lifetimes out of five, they might choose to spiritually discipline themselves. And then in the other lifetimes, they kind of may start at it or just become an aspirin and leave doing it. They say, well, this is just too hard, or they may also become illusioned and start doing material things that they think are spiritual. It's a very, very complex and difficult process. Okay, so it can take dozens of lifetimes. Certainly a dozen is not unusual. And that's if a person is even doing it maybe one out of two or three lifetimes. That's an amazing thing. And when the person is involved in that, that is sometimes referred to as the first level of initiation. Now, for those of you who have heard those words before, you're probably saying, oh, initiation, you're going to talk about that. Yeah, I'm going to kind of talk about it. I don't want to get too far into this because the fact of the matter is some people really aspire too much to be an initiate than they do to create more spirituality in the world, which is not a good idea because then you have the wrong motive thing going again. So I don't want to encourage too much of that, but I will tell you about it. And that is that someone who is functioning to increase their etheric physical senses and to balance them out and to get them to join together over time and to make themselves into a more spiritual person, at least etheric physically, those people are called first-level initiates because the first-level initiation is literally the first point of developing someone into a more spiritual person and in leaving the whole human kingdom. There are four levels to leave the human kingdom at the present time. It actually gets more difficult over time, so someday there might be five levels or more, who knows. But right now there's four, and the first level deals with the etheric physical body. And it deals with bringing this body up to a state of union, we'll say. Some people call it yoga. A union between the senses of about 10%, give or take. And if a person can get all these senses to be unified together 10% of the time that they are consciously functioning while they're mostly awake in the physical world and while they're interacting and doing anything, then that person is functioning as a first-level initiate near the end of that initiation. And what does that mean? Well, it means that you're completing a process that will require 100% before you're done, but the 10%, give or take, level that you're achieving or trying to achieve in this beginning process will allow you to make a significant contribution to the physical world, one in which many parts of the spiritual service a person provides leads to a much more spiritual world in general, which is quite a good thing. So people who are involved in this process are trying to contribute to a physical world that is really significantly improved in a material versus spiritual way, balancing the world out more in the same way that they're balancing their body, their senses, and their consciousness more. They're providing this to others. It isn't that they're just doing it in themselves, because that's not the point. They have to complete the process by giving it to others and making a difference in the world. Oftentimes, the difference can be seen in a real, tangible, physical outcome. So that's a good thing. Now, it's very interesting how the rest of this process works, which I'm going to go into after the next break. But I think it's important to realize that in every step of the way, a person is making some kind of spiritual contribution, not just like, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that until I eventually can give or can eventually can serve. No, the whole process involves some type of spiritual service. I want you to be sure to be understanding that there's like It isn't just education. It isn't just spiritual discipline. It is actually giving back and creating more of the Creator in the world around you, and oftentimes doing this with others. Very important to understand that process, because otherwise people can get the wrong idea from the things I'm talking about, and I don't want that to happen, of course. So this is going to be done with others, not just alone. Eventually, you may start it alone, but you certainly won't finish it alone. I guarantee that. It has to be done with others, because souls work together as a unit. They are individuals, at least in consciousness, but they also, in terms of activity, work together. And they work together to achieve the goal of creating more of their Creator. So it's very important to see it that way. Okay, we will be back in another minute or two, and I will continue explaining this whole process to you.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And you know what? We still got a little bit of feedback and other stuff on this line. So actually, this hasn't helped. But anyway, we tried changing lines, and for some reason, I've got feedback going on today. I have a suspicion it's on my board or someplace in a line going to into the radio station. So I hope that you could all hear me. That's the most important part. I'm going to slightly turn down my gain and see if that helps. Okay, so let's continue on now with this explanation of how spiritual discipline works. To begin with, it's very important to understand that the etheric physical body is actually the easiest of all the bodies, and the first initiation only takes us to about 10% of unification of the senses in that one body. And then, after that, a person actually goes on in the process, and they get some help from the next kingdom, and it gives them a little bit of a spurt. I'm not going to go into that part, but that's actually called the initiation itself. And in the next part of it, the spiritual discipline really focuses in on the astral body, but continues to grow and unify the etheric physical body to approximately the same level eventually that the astral body ends up at. And that level is at 25%, give or take, of the ability to join all the senses in the body. That's called the second level of initiation. So you see, you keep growing the one body while you add a new body, and that makes it much more complicated because the new body is more difficult to spiritually discipline than the first one, and you're going to a much higher level. So this is really a difficult process once you start getting into it. People who are working on the second initiation have completed the first in most circumstances. If a person chooses to start working on it, on the astral body, before they complete the etheric physical to the minimum level of about 10%, then because of spiritual ambition, they can get themselves in a lot of trouble. And that's really unfortunate. So I think it's important to understand that as someone gets deeper and deeper in this process, they have many more parts of it that could throw them off the spiritual path because the difficulty is rising so dramatically and because in each lifetime they may not remember having done any spiritual discipline, having been a spiritual disciple, until they have gained the point where they have 50% or more of their senses joined in all three of the bodies. That's a difficult point because that's called the middle of the third initiation. And for most people, they may not be there until the last seven or so of their lifetimes while being a human being. This means that for most of the time, a person doesn't even remember that in prior lifetimes they have actually been doing this activity. That's unfortunate, but that's the way it works. Now, you might have little pieces of memories, and you obviously have some encouragement from having done it before. It feels more like home. But then again, it's very difficult to achieve. So I would suggest those of you who are discouraged or having a problem with this, you recognize that this is not an easy process. It's probably the most difficult process that any human being can go through. As a matter of fact, it's known as that. So if you're having those kinds of problems, number one, you can call me. You can also listen more to these shows as well. But I think it's important to understand that you can get through it because people do manage to do that. Okay, well, so someone is actually, they're disciplining their astral body, and they are at the same time, they are actually trying to raise the consciousness in their etheric physical at the same time through raising their awareness and joining these all together. This is quite an accomplishment to do. And most people have their highest failure rate while working in the second initiation and working on their astral body with the etheric physical being built up to the same level. This seems to be the highest failure rate. Apparently because astral issues and how people feel, how their astral feelings, some people call them emotional reactions, seems to so debilitate the senses and cause people to spin out of control and to leave the spiritual path. Even if they've done years of spiritual discipline beforehand, they can leave suddenly and devastating that particular lifetime. Now, they may go on in the astral world after physical death to regain some of their spiritual discipline, because once you get to the astral world, it's just much easier to discipline the astral body than it is while you're physically alive, because you don't have the physical senses to deal with. You don't have to worry about those senses being brought up to the same level as the astral senses. And also spiritual discipline in general becomes easier because consciousness tends to grow as we leave one body and go on to a more subtle body to focus our consciousness and thought through. And the activities that are done are easier to carry out in the more subtle worlds. So it's just harder to live physically than any other way. Okay, so thinking about it from that standpoint, then I want everybody who's listening to me to realize that once a person has, we'll say, left the spiritual path in a particular lifetime, it's very unlikely they will return to it while in that body. It's really a rarity, and that's unfortunate as well. So falling off the spiritual path oftentimes means that until you die for that body and go on to the next dimension, time, and space, it's not likely you're going to regain being a spiritual person and function in a way that is spiritually disciplined. Sometimes people get amazingly selfish and even dark and even possessed because of this unfortunate difficulty. That's a very bad outcome, of course, and I'm hoping that none of you listening to me will end up in that position. Okay, now let's go on to the next initiation, which is called the third initiation. And the third initiation focuses on the mental body and how we think in a mental sense. It's very important to understand that the mental body has senses just like the astral and the physical, but most people aren't aware of those senses because they're so amazingly subtle, particularly while we're physically alive. This is the great challenge, because while most people have some idea of what an astral sense is, and of course we all have ideas of what physical senses are, mental senses are almost like, oh, what is he talking about, you know, that sort of stuff, and that problem is very significant. It's so significant that for most people, working on a body that they can't even sense the senses from, it seems almost impossible. But it is, and it can be done over time. And it takes an amazing level of balance in the two lower bodies first, and then a lot of effort to overcome things called egotism and arrogance to reach a point where you become open to what the mind of yourself is and the thoughts and minds, mental thoughts and minds of others are, so that you can help encourage a spiritual perspective in their mental thinking. But first you have to get it in yourself. This requires almost a complete and total humility with no significant levels of egotism in order to achieve. Even a minor amount of egotism will block out the ability to use these more subtle senses of the heart and crown chakras in the lower and higher mental bodies, which if you can't balance those to the other five senses in the mental body, will prevent virtually any further unification of that body and any growth in awareness of the Creator's thought in yourself and in others. This requires a lot of work, and it also means that a tremendous amount of spiritual service is required, or you will not be able to achieve the ultimate goal, which is to be a spiritual service to others by helping them to think more in a mental sense of their own Creator and to help them to do the same with all other people. This is a critical element today because egotism has grown and it hasn't gotten less. It's getting much worse. It's just the nature of the race we're in and the times we're in, making egotism dominant. So for spiritual disciples, this becomes a real challenge. The third initiation is terribly challenging, very difficult, but oddly, more spiritual disciples actually complete the process faster during the third initiation than they do during the second, where there's so much failure. Part of the reason is that once you get the first two bodies relatively balanced to each other, even though the third body is almost impossible to sense, there's less obstruction to continuing forward with the process, even though it is much more difficult to do. And so the prior accomplishments really help us to move forward and to do a oftentimes bang-up job, a terrific job, as momentum is gained in overcoming egotism, one's own egotism now I'm talking about. Humility is the greatest single element in the third initiation. Now, there are things called the renunciations, which means that a person is denying the dark use of senses in all three bodies at any particular time. It really, really means that a person is not only working to unify their senses and create spiritual development sometime, up to about 50% of the senses, by the way, but it also means that they are specifically stamping out all the dark thoughts and reducing those thoughts to a level where they are fully conscious, and then where they are eliminated by first eliminating the egotism that allows them to continue, and then eventually eliminating the will or choices to carry through on them in any particular way. This is very critical. It takes quite a bit of effort to achieve this, but once a person has gone through these renunciations of wrong use of mental senses and all other senses in all three bodies, a person then at that particular point becomes impervious to evil. They cannot any longer become evil by their own choices or by any factor, and they're safe from it. It's a very good thing, but it takes quite a bit to achieve this. It's a great thing now. The last, going through this third level of initiation, a person is then given another boost by the next kingdom through a process which I'm not going to describe today. And the last initiation that a person is faced in dealing with is the full joining together of the three bodies, in all, the seven senses in each of the three bodies, in a total equal way, fused together into one sense of all three dimensions of time and space at the same time. This is called the fourth initiation. The people who are doing this are sometimes referred to as arhats, and they are amazing because they are actually more a soul than they are a human being while they are physically, astrally, and lower mentally alive throughout their life. They actually are more of a soul than that, which is an amazing thing. But they're still considered human as long as they're not completely a soul. And in order to become completely a soul, they have to then complete this process of joining 21 different senses. Actually, if you count the lower and higher mental senses, it's actually 28, but it depends on how you want to look at it. But all you have to join all these senses together into one single sense that is completely unified and completely balanced. It's called the completion of the lower three worlds of yoga. It's a big deal. And it is the ticket for becoming a member of the next kingdom. Generally speaking, these arhats do this in 1 to 3 lifetimes. Usually they take 2 or 3 lifetimes. Very rarely, if ever, someone does it in one lifetime. But it is an extremely, important process because it is the only way that a human being can move on and become a fully conscious, fully freed soul. The soul itself actually stops living in the higher mental world and becomes a permanent member living in the Buddhic or intuitional world. An amazing process in itself. There's a lot more to say about this, but I've run out of time for today. And I wanted to mention that this week, this Sunday on WDISAM.com radio, or 1170 AM if you're in the East Coast area, that's this Sunday, from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to be talking about joining scientific thought with spiritual thought, and that's going to be part one of that particular show. And, of course, if you have a chance, you can listen in, either over the air or over the Internet. And if you also are in the Phoenix area, you can visit one of the members of the group, spiritual group I'm a member of, and on February 4th from 7 to 8:15, and she'll be talking about understanding evil, and this is going to be at Borders in Glendale. So if you want to go to that, Borders in Glendale, from 7 o'clock to 8:15, please join her and listen to that. Okay, well, we are running out of time very quickly here. I just wanted to tell you that if this is a subject that you want more information on, you can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com, or you can give me a call, and you can get our phone number off of our website at Ageless Wisdom Distributors. So, agelesswisdomdistributors.com. And off of that website, you'll be able to get the phone number. So until next week, I hope this show has been of some help in giving you an idea of what it means to be a spiritual disciple. And someday we'll have a much more involved show. I'll explain a lot more about it. And until then, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.